Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 11, text 31. Prayasva bhava vihito nirnam dharmo yuge yuge veda drigbi smrito rajan pratya cheha chasarma krit prayasva bhava vihito nirnam dharmo yuge yuge Veda drigbi smrito rajan pratya cheha chasarma krit prayasva bhava vihito nirnam dharmo yuge yuge Veda drigbi smrito rajan pratya cheha chasarma krit. Others. Vaishnavis. Praya generally swabhava vihita. Prescribed according to one's material modes of nature. Nirnam, of human society. Dharma, the occupational duty. Yuge, yuge, in every age. Veda drigbi, by brahmanas, well conversant in Vedic knowledge. Smita, recognized. Rajan, O king. Pratya, after death. Cha, and. Iha, here, in this body. Cha, also. Sharmakrit, auspicious. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. My dear king, brahmanas, well conversant in Vedic knowledge, have given their verdict that in every age, yuga, the conduct of different sections of people according to their material modes of nature is auspicious. Did I read that right? The conduct of different sections of people according to their material modes of nature is auspicious both in this life and after death. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text 35, it is said, Srayan swadharmo viguna padadharmat svanushtitat. It is far better to discharge one's prescribed duties, even though they may be faulty, than another's duties. End quote. The antyajas, the men of the lower classes, are accustomed to stealing, drinking, and illicit sex. But that is not considered sinful. For example, if a tiger kills a man, this is not sinful. But if a man kills another man, this is considered sinful, and the killer is hanged. What is a daily affair among the animals is a sinful act in human society. Thus, according to the symptoms of higher and lower sections of society, there are different varieties of occupational duties. According to the experts in Vedic knowledge, these duties are prescribed in terms of the age concerned. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastai Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Govardhavani Pacharine Nivashesha Sunyavadi Paschajari Shatarine. So most people would agree that life is important and life should be protected. At least human life. Because other than human life, I don't think you'd get agreement for that, because when I was on this Sankirtan trip, we were distributing books outside these concerts, and every day when we would leave the concert, there'd be a group out there called PETA, Prevention to Cruelty to Animals, like that. And they were distributing their brochures to the people as they were leaving. And so I picked one up and I read it. And it was interesting. It was saying that every year 55 billion animals are killed and something like a trillion fish, if their figures are accurate. Anyway, some astounding number. So I don't think you couldn't say that most human beings value life in general, because it's obviously they don't value non-human life, because look how many non-human creatures are killed, 55 billion, trillion fish. But at least human life is valued, right? I think everybody would agree with that. Human life is valued pretty much. No, not necessarily. I was having lunch the other day at the devotee's home, and he's from South India. I think he said he was from Trivandrum, which is south of Vishakhapatnam, if I remember correctly. Anyway, so I was just curious to say, hey, what's life like down there? You know, what's going on? A lot of people like here in Los Angeles, is it more populated, less populated? You know, what's... Anyway, so one of the things that came out in the course of the conversation, there's a lot of people there. It's actually more densely populated than here in Los Angeles. And, I can't remember how we got around to it, but he made the point that when children are born, if it's a female child, his wife just had a child or something like that. So the point came on to children, and he made the point that in India they don't tell you, you know, the doctors don't tell the parents whether it's a boy or a girl. Because if they tell them whether it's a boy and a girl, if they find out it's a girl, then they kill it. And I think I've heard previously in China they do the same thing, because they don't want female children. Because female children are expensive, you know, they have a lot of care and attention, and they don't, you know, they're less likely to be wage earners, you know, to be able to go out and earn money and help the family out of its poverty-stricken condition. So they don't want female children, so there's a very high possibility that they get aborted. So it's not even that all human life is valued by most people. But anyway, it brings it down to human male life. At least most human male life would be valued, right? Well, wrong. Not necessarily even all human male life is valued, because he further went on to make the point that a lot of these kids, the male kids even, they don't get to go to school because they don't have any food. They have, you know, this program of like lunchtime, hot meals for lunch. If it wasn't for that program, a lot of kids in India at least wouldn't go to school because they have nothing to eat. They're too hungry in the middle, right? Am I getting this right, Shastrakrit? They're so hungry in the middle of the day they can't think straight. So if there wasn't this program, but at least if you're, you know, human and you're male and you have money, then your life is valued, right? Then, you know, that's valuable and life's worth saving. But what is that saving? You know, we're saving what? They don't have an understanding. Like, you know, really, there's no correct understanding of even what to save. Like yesterday, I had to go to the hospital. My father had some health problems. He had like his pulse was up to like 135. So he went to the doctor, and they took him to the hospital. and they did something to try to help him. And I was in the waiting room, and when this surgeon, cardiologist came out and took me into this other place, where he was recovering. And he showed me, he explained to me what was going on, and he showed me like a film of, like a movie of what they had done for the last 2 hours, while they were working on my father. And I was like amazed. I said, wow, this is like, these guys so clever. They could, not only did they do it, but they had to take a movie of it at the same time, and they could show you the movie. He was showing me what's going on, explaining the different things and all. I was thinking, wow, it's amazing. But what is it like? It's they're trying to save life, but what is their understanding of life? It's just the body. It's just to save the body. Prabhupada once talked about like our ISKCON temples as being hospitals, the real hospitals, because we're interested in not just saving the body, which really, if you stop and think, it can't be saved. It's inevitable that the body, you can postpone it. You can postpone the demise of the body, but you can't eliminate it. It's got to, it's got to go sooner or later. So, Prabhupada said these are the real hospitals because we're trying to save the soul, which is really what life is. Not the body is not life, the soul is life. And we're trying to save the soul from, being caught up in the cycle of birth and death and helping the soul go back to the spiritual world to live eternally with Krishna. So these are the real hospitals. But most people's response to that would be, that they just think this is, they don't believe in it. They don't believe there is such a thing as a soul even, or that there is a cycle of birth and death. At least here in the West, that's a very prevalent sort of a way of thinking. Maybe in some other parts of the world, it's more of an acceptance of that idea of like that we are souls who are reincarnating and there's a cycle of birth. But at least here in America, for instance, that's just like, fantasy for the most part. And if some people do give lip service to that idea, that they'll say, oh, I believe in reincarnation, I believe in a cycle of birth and death. There's an expression, action speaks louder than words. As you could see from what people are doing, what kind of institutions are there, where people's heads are really at, what they really believe in. There's hospitals, get in your car and drive, every 10 miles is another hospital. But where are the educational centers to help people prepare for leaving this body and going on to their next body? That they don't exist, at least not outside of ISKCON. This is it. The ISKCON temples are the only educational institutions for that, to help people, prepare for death and going on to another body. Why? Because even though people might say, oh, I believe in reincarnation, I think there's a cycle, they don't really, because they don't do anything about it. What they really think is important, they do something about. People really think cell phones are important, and therefore there's half a dozen different brands and factories all over the place producing them, computers, cars. You can understand what people actually think is important by just looking around and seeing what there is. That gives you a pretty good idea what people think is important, what they put their energy into, and what we actually have out there. So they don't think that's important or even for real. And even like the it's very bewildered. But even the organizations which are meant to give people knowledge about this kind of thing, you could say, well, somebody could object. They could say, well, there's Christian churches. They're trying to give people knowledge of what life's all, life after death and life, is something more than just the body. And that's true. But a couple just comments, observations about that. One is that it seems to be on the decline. Prabhupada himself made comments that, a lot of our, when he was here with us, he said a lot of the temples we're getting used to be Christian churches, and people lost interest. They stopped coming, and they were closing them down and selling them, and we bought them. And then there's also that expression, post-Christian Europe. I just, I've heard that expression over the last few years. In other words, indicating that it used to be a lot more Christian than what it is now. People losing interest, right? And no wonder, at least from another kind of an observation, that their idea is of life is that at least like after death is that when you die you either go to heaven or you go to hell, but that doesn't seem to be. I don't think they're giving people accurate information. At least it's contradicted by whatever little scientific evidence there is in this area, which is not much. And Prabhupada lamented that. He said, you know, I think in 1967 or 69, Prabhupada went to MIT, and he was lecturing there. And he challenged the students, said, okay, so where is the department of knowledge to understand what is the difference between a dead body and a living body? Right? So there isn't one. I mean, once again, aside from, you know, ISKCON temples. But, and I mean, the closest thing there might be to one would be like in University of Virginia in Charlottesville, there's a department of personality studies where they study, you know, the phenomena of kids who have spontaneous memory of a past life and or a near-death out-of-body experience. That would be the closest thing to what Prabhupada was referring to that I could think of, you know, with the department where they're studying what is the difference between a dead body and a living body. Of course, nobody is pays any attention to that, and they just struggle to even stay in existence. But, yeah, so at least what Christianity is teaching is contradicted by whatever little, you know, quote, you know, if it's accepted as scientific evidence there is for what really happens when you die. Because, you know, according to that, those investigations or studies that there is reincarnation. There are kids who remember their past lives, and when they, even when they, you know, try to study it in a very scientific way, the people who do that who are not Buddhists and not Hindus, and, you know, they have no hidden agenda. They're just trying to, like, investigate this and see, well, what's going on here? They come back with, they think the best explanation is reincarnation. So it's not just that the Bhagavad Gita is saying that it's, you know, this, it's that way. It's, there is some empiric evidence to support our worldview, and it's interesting how it really does directly contradicts the worldview that's being presented by Christianity and, of course, modern science as well. But going on from there, so, yeah. Yes, they want to save life, but no understanding of what life really is. You know, Prabhupada gave that example of, so it's understandable how things are going to, so why they're so confused and why things are so, like, topsy-turvy. Actually, I think Prabhupada actually even used that expression. I mean, Kali Yuga, everything's topsy-turvy. No wonder. No wonder it's all topsy-turvy. People don't even understand what life is, you know. Really, for most people, for the vast majority of people today, life means this, that at a mature stage of biological development, the symptoms of life appear. And then when that biological development breaks down, that's death, and that's the end of everything. And that's their understanding of life, you see? So with an understanding like that, which is, you know, incorrect, no wonder that things are screwed up as what they are today. You know, Prabhupada gave the example of if you're doing a mathematical problem, and in the very first line of your calculations, you have 2 plus 2 is 5. And, you know, all the further procedures you do after that are dependent upon that. Then, you know, it's going to be way off. It's going to, you know, your answer is going to be wrong. Unless you inadvertently make another mistake that compensates for that mistake. But, you know, if you have that in the first line of your equation, then everything is going to be off. So in the same way, if you know, the beginning of your thinking, you're thinking, well, life is just material, just a material phenomena, nothing more, nothing less. When you're born, that's the beginning of everything. When you die, that's the end of everything. So, you know, if you're thinking like that, then of course it makes sense. Then everything we see around us makes sense. So, you know, but the problem is that's incorrect. The problem is 2 plus 2 doesn't equal 5. 2 plus 2 is 4. So they're starting with a fallacious basic premise, and therefore everything, you know, that developing on from there is just all crazy. You know, it's crazy. It's chaos. And this world is totally crazy. And well, another example of that, you know, how crazy, I mean, you know, there's unlimited examples of how crazy things are. Here's an example. You take a, you know, look, who's considered successful people in this society, in contemporary human society? I mean, this is well, I'll give you a few examples. And this is not everybody in this category, but there are a significant number. Let's take Michael Jackson. He was a very famous person, considered a very successful person. But, he was a known, or at least suspected pedophile. He might have been a convicted pedophile. I never really followed his career very carefully or closely. But, you know, there's the point I'm making, that even according to their own standards, people who they hold as very successful, who a lot of people idolize, are simultaneously people that they themselves, by their own standards, acknowledge have very serious defects in their personality. What kind of people are they, you know, worshipping, so to speak? Michael Jackson, just give some other examples. Elvis Presley, he was very famous. Apparently, he was kind of a nice guy. When he became rich, he looked after his friends and family, gave a lot of charity and stuff like that. But when he had serious problems. He was like a, you know, I think an alcoholic or a drug addict or both. And if he didn't, I don't think he committed suicide, but he died of abuse of those, substance abuse, basically. Was, you know. So, you know, there's another guy who's held like a big hero, but serious problems. Marilyn Monroe. She's like, a, you know, to this day, you see kids wearing T-shirts with her picture on it. She's like, oh, wow. But she committed suicide. I mean, you know, you don't commit suicide if you're really super happy and everything. You have, you know, things, you got some serious stuff bothering you if you commit suicide. And the list goes on and on and on. Let's see, what's another one just off the top? Mike Tyson. He was, when I first came here to Newswalka, he was a big splash. He was like, you know, heavyweight fighter. And, but the guy was like, went bonkers sometimes. You know, he, in a championship fight, again, he bit the ear of his opponent. You know, he couldn't control his mind. You know, to his credit, I actually met him when I was in Terminal 1 with Charo Chandra. He came through. And people were kind of like going up to him and pestering this and that. But he kept it together pretty nicely there. I was kind of impressed by how he behaved there. He was very cool and he just kind of acted very humble. But, you know, like this is, once again, just an example. There's so many examples like that. I mean, you know, as opposed to, you know better. There's so many examples of people who are like glorified and worshiped basically. And they're JFK. It came out like, you know, years after he passed away that he like had serious problems with, once again, substance abuse. So, and he was kind of like, you know, I remember, yeah, he was worshipped, basically. So anyways, it's a very, contemporary human society is really, it's confused like anything, you know, it's really got a misunderstanding about, you know, what's what. And we get information from the Bhagavatam. Yesterday, I went into Archita's office yesterday, the day before, and he showed me this book they had printed in India. And basically what it was a description of, that, you know, that section in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam where it talks about what will happen in Kali Yuga as life progresses. So, you know, he asked me, well, have a look at it because, you know, we want to consider should we buy it, to distribute here or not. So I looked through it. It was good. You know, it was kind of like very devotee-oriented. It wasn't something that, you know, like that made a big attempt to bridge the gap, you know, like, you know, kind of explain it in a way that they could understand. It was just, here it is. This is our stuff. But, you know, nevertheless, the statements were interesting. I mean, I remember, like, one statement was that in Kali Yuga, I can't remember the exact words, but if you don't have money, you're considered irreligious. You know, a person who doesn't have money is considered irreligious. A person who will be considered, like, intelligent and wise if they're very audacious and they're good at double talk. You know, they can just kind of, like, word jugglery, how Prabhupada would say. So, you know, in other words, it's bad now, and according to the descriptions in the predictions of the Bhagavatam, 12th canto, it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse. So getting to today's verse, you know, it's talking about how the Brahmins, you know, they're well conversant in Vedic knowledge. They give their verdict that in every age, Yuga, the conduct of different sections of the people according to their material modes of nature is auspicious, both in this life and afterlife. So, of course, this was written 5,000 years ago, and, you know, back when the Bhagavatam was written, there was more of like the Vanashram was more in existence. But like now, there's, you know, there's no Vanashram. And there was, like, this has been, it's kind of simple for us. How does this verse apply to us? Very simply. Prabhupada says here in the last sentence, according to experts in Vedic knowledge, the duties are described in terms of the age. Right, okay, you know, thus according to the symptoms of higher and lower sections of society, there are different varieties of occupational duties. Okay, so one point there is that as far as higher and lower sections of society go, it's all lower, right? It's all lower. Kalo Sudra Sambhava, right? That's right out of the Bhagavatam. So there's no higher and lower, there's just lower and lower. There's lower and lower sections of human society. And it says there are different varieties of duties, and Prabhupada refers to, in the first line of his purport, he refers to this Bhagavad Gita verse 335. And in there he says, he makes this point, whether spiritual duties or, but whether material or spiritual, he makes a distinction between material and spiritual duties. And he goes on to say that, what was the thing I was looking for? Oh, yeah. Duties on the spiritual platform and duties on the material platform may be different, but the principle of following the authorized direction is always good for the performer. That's a very important phrase in the sentence, that The principle of following authorized direction is always good for the performer. So it's the way we can understand what our material and spiritual duties are is by getting authorized direction. So authorized direction, of course, is received from the Shastra and initially and the spiritual master. So as far as what the prescribed duties are for the people of this age, here's a verse that kind of deals with that or, addresses that. This is, I'll read it. Nama vinu kali kale nahi aradharma sarva mantra sara nama eshastra marma. Does that sound familiar to anybody? That's actually, does anybody know who's speaking there and who's speaking to who there? Sura? Arjuna? No? Anyway, it's Lord Chaitanya. He's speaking to, Lord Chaitanya is quoting Ishvara Puri to Prakasananda Saraswati when he's talking to him. And he's saying, this is Lord Chaitanya speaking, quoting his spiritual master, Ishvara Puri, "In this age of Kali, there is no religious principle other than the chanting of the holy name, which is the essence of all Vedic hymns. This is the purport of all scriptures." So in other words, getting back to the purport, as far as the duties go, prescribed, the duties are prescribed in terms of the age. In this age, the only religious duty anyway, there might be some different material duties, although they're not even bothered to mention here, but it's chanting the holy name. That's the only religious, that's what's said here, that's the only religious principle in the age of Kali, chanting the holy name. This is further confirmed by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the author of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. A little bit further on in the Majjhalila, he says, and I know Sura knows this one, "A kali kale ara nahi kona dharma." Yeah. "In this age of Kali," I'll just say because he doesn't have the microphone, "in this age of Kali, there are no genuine religious principles. There are only the Vaishnav devotees and the Vaishnav devotional scriptures. This is the sum and substance of everything." You see? So, basically what I'm getting at is just that, it's crazy what's going on out there. I tried to kind of give a little, picture of that, and it's going to get crazier according to the scriptures. And the only saving grace, the only hope is to take shelter of the Krishna consciousness movement, which means taking shelter of these, these scriptures, which is said here, is the only religious, what did I just read? There are only Vaishnav devotees and Vaishnav devotional scriptures. This is the sum and substance of everything. And actually, another important point is, it says there's Vaishnav devotional scriptures, but you notice it said there are only Vaishnav devotees and Vaishnav devotional scriptures. Both are important because even if you just have the Vaishnav devotional scriptures, you might misunderstand. You need the help of the Vaishnav devotees to understand the Vaishnav devotional scriptures. I give an example of that. Just like that verse I just previously quoted, from it was Lord Chaitanya quoting Ishvara Puri. He goes, in the age of Kali, there's no religious principle other than chanting of the holy name. See, so some very new person might read that and think, oh, okay, well, if that's the only religious principle and that's the essence of the Vedic hymns and that's the purport of all the scriptures, let me just do that all day. I'll just chant the holy name all day. And that's not bad. That's not bad, but that's not what Prabhupada asked us to do. Follow what I'm saying? No, it's good to chant the holy name, and it's good to chant the holy name a lot. But it's the way we understand even the Vaishnav scriptures. We've got to understand the Vaishnav scriptures from the Vaishnav devotees, from not just any old Vaishnav devotee, but from the most advanced devotee, the pure devotee. Let's use Prabhupada as the example. Prabhupada told us, okay, yeah, chant 16 rounds and go on Harinam. But Prabhupada gave us a lot of other things he wanted us to do. And as part of, part of being like a member of Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement is worshiping the deities, actually the whole temple and the whole, temple community idea is like it's preaching and going out and distributing books. In other words, even to understand the Vaishnav scriptures correctly, you got to get what did I say? Authorized direction. The principle of following authorized direction is always good for the performer. We need authorized direction. Even to understand our own scriptures, we need authorized direction. That's important, right? And it's very, and actually, if you stop and think about it, that's what surrender is. You know, I was thinking about this yesterday. What is surrender? You know, we hear that word surrender, surrender. What does it mean? Surrender means that you're prepared to give up your own, like, idea, you know, of how to do it, and you're prepared to receive, okay, the authorized direction, or my guru, or my temple president, if somebody is telling me, this is the proper way to understand this, and, you know, this is the proper way to go about doing this, or, you know, applying this when I'm reading here. And you surrender to that, and you take shelter of that, and you give it, you know, wholehearted, you accept it with wholehearted enthusiasm, and that's what you go with, you see? And then you're surrendered. The more you do that, to the degree you accept authorized direction in every different aspect of your life, and you really kind of like, that's what you're taking shelter of, that's what you're going with, to that degree you're surrendered. And to the degree you're not willing to do that, even you may be fortunate enough to come to Krishna consciousness, and only fortunate people can come to Krishna consciousness, you know, Brahmananda Brahmate Kona Bhagyavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasadava, Kona Bhagyavan Jeev, only the living entity that's fortunate even gets to come, you know, gets the mercy of Krishna and the Guru and like that. But even when you're here, you got to go more. It's kind of like you're here, and then it's not like you come by good fortune to Krishna, and then you just kind of try to figure it out for yourself. You see, that's called being independent. Independent is the opposite of taking authorized direction. Independent is when you're thinking like, well, I know it's, you know, the authorities are saying like this, but I think I could do it like this. Or I think this is the correct way to, you know, go about becoming Krishna conscious or something like that. Oh, you could do that. And, you know, it's kind of like, in one sense, you're kind of protected because you're in, you know, as long as you stay within the big, you know, picture of Krishna consciousness, but it's not as effective. You're going to make more advancement. That's what we want to do. We want to make advancement. We want to progress towards pure devotional service. You're going to make a lot more advancement if you take shelter of a person, you know, get some authorized direction. You see? Get some authorized direction. And it's just like when you want to learn something, even in the material, when you want to learn something. You know, say you want to learn carpentry, okay? Just using that as an example, how to play the piano. You can go to the library and get a book. You know, so somebody might say, oh, good, he's wanting to learn carpentry. That's good. It is good. Okay, you want to do something with your life. You know? But how are you going to learn better? Are you going to learn better by going to the library and getting a book about carpentry, a book about how to play the piano? Or are you going to do better if you are fortunate enough to meet some expert piano player or some expert carpenter, let's just say carpenter, and that person says, oh, yeah, you want to learn carpentry? Come and work with me. Come work with me. And you help that person. And, you know, the process of helping him, he shows you what a bevel is, what this is, what a notch is. You know, you learn all the tricks of the trade from the expert. You become an apprentice, and you work as an apprentice to the expert, and that's how everybody knows. That's the most effective way to learn, you know, as opposed to if you try to learn from a book. It's hard. You ever try it? It's hard to learn from a book. You might not understand what's being said, and even you kind of like, you understand what's being said. When you try to do it, it doesn't quite work for you, and you got nobody there to show you, oh, this is what you're doing wrong, and it's not the way to do it. You know, best way to do is have like work under an expert, and the same thing holds true for spiritual life. You got to work under an expert, and that's the way to make your best advancement. And the people who do that, they progress most satisfactorily. And people who don't do that, you know, they're free to, you know, they're free to choose to do that, but. I think it's a mistake, you know. This is the effective way to do it. Now, what else was I going to say? What time is it? Okay, I'll stop. Does anybody have any questions or comments about any of these points? Couldn't think of my next thing anyway. So. Yeah. Oh, the purport. Well, okay. I'll try to say something about the purport. Try to touch a little bit upon. So Prabhupada's saying that the antajas, the men of lower classes, are accustomed to, I've mentioned a couple things in the purport, are accustomed to stealing, drinking, and illicit sex, but that is not considered sinful. So that's kind of like answering the question I asked yesterday at the end of the class to Judah Karma. Prabhupada seemed to answer it here. It said it's actually not sinful for them. It's not that it's just socially considered not sinful, but, you know, it's really sinful. Apparently, they're not held responsible for that because they're not capable of doing otherwise. And the way I say that is Prabhupada goes on to give the example. He says, for example, a tiger kills a man. That is not sinful. You see, so that he's making an analogy here. Just as like when a tiger kills a man, it's not sinful. When a lower class person steals, drinks, and has illicit sex, they're not sinful because they're not capable of doing otherwise, just like a tiger is not capable of doing otherwise. Okay, you're asking me to explain it, but then you're raising your hand. Go ahead. I don't know. To give you, I don't know. I've never thought about it, so I don't want to just try to, like, you know, shoot something off the top. Do you know? Have you thought about it? Yeah, we'll have to think about it. I'm thinking if we think about it for a while, we'll probably come up with something. But I can't, off the top of my head, come up with anything. But at least here, it seems to be indicating that these, you know, lower class people, just like the tiger, is not held responsible. He's not considered sinful for killing a man. They're not considered sinful for doing those things. Well, at least on this, you know, the strength of those statements there.
Bhakti Marg Swami Ki Jai.
And I try to say something about the last couple sentences in the purport, where it talks about the higher and lower sections of society and how the only thing really is just is only lower, and, you know, we're all sudras are lower, so the most important thing is to just, you know, follow the authorized direction, which for this age is the chanting. Actually, just a couple more things on the chanting. And the importance of participating in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, just to try to encourage everybody. There's a very nice verse in the, actually appears in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It says, Kalim sabha jayantya arya gunagya sarabhagina yatra sankirtananeva naineva sarva svarta belabhyate. Those who are actually advanced in knowledge are able to appreciate the essential value of this age of Kali. Such enlightened persons worship Kali Yuga because in this fallen age, all perfection of life can easily be achieved by the performance of Sankirtan. And then there's one other where, the famous one, Krishna Varna Tusakrishnam Sangopangas Chaparshanam Yajnare Sankirtana Praya Yajanti Hisumedashat. Those who are intelligent, Yajanti Hisumedashat, they worship Lord Chaitanya. They worship the Lord by performing the Sankirtan Jagya. So, yeah, understanding of intelligence. Actually, there's a difference between being intelligent and being clever. You know, clever means you can just manipulate the material energy in ways that you can maybe improve the quality of material life. That's at least, and Prabhupada defines intelligence as the ability to distinguish between matter and spirit and know who's the controller of both. So, yeah, there's a difference. You know, I remember there's one Prabhupada disciple, Mitra Singh. He's from Los Angeles here. I remember one day I was living in North Carolina at Prabhupada Village at one point, some years ago, and he just, I mean, this is something that stuck in my mind. You know, we were talking about something. He said, human beings are by nature intelligent. But he meant clever, because they're not intelligent. If they were intelligent, they would take to the Sankirtan movement. But it's a fact. Human beings are by nature clever. You just have to look at what I described yesterday about what I experienced when I went to the hospital is an example of that. You know, not only they're operating on my father, but they're taking a movie of the thing at the same time. I mean, human beings are clever. They're not blithering idiots. But they're not intelligent because they're not taking up spiritual, they have no interest in spiritual life. So at least, you know, if, according to those definitions, people, yeah, sir, you have your microphone in the hand.
I just had a question about your statements in class. You were saying about the beloved Marilyn Monroe and the honorable Elvis Presley and, my God, JFK. The love of our lives. But we see someone could say, I'm not saying, but someone could say, well, besides Srila Prabhupada, in your ISKCON movement, you glorify men who've also wound up with serious troubles like the ones you mentioned. So how do you explain that?
Okay. Well, Krishna does say in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, apichet suraracharo bhajate mama nanyabak sarareva samantavyag samyag bhayavisita hisada. Even if one commits the most abominable activity, if he's you know, engaged in devotional service, he's still to be considered saintly because he's properly situated. So some of them have, you know, engaged in maybe abominable activities, but have gone on to continue to engage in devotional service. So that has to be, you know, they qualify to be, you know, being, you know, described there in that verse. And to those who've given it up completely, yeah, well, what can you do? I mean, you know, it's kind of Prabhupada said, it's don't be surprised by who leaves, be surprised by who stays. It's not easy. Engaging in devotional service is not, it's like declaring war against the illusory energy. It's not an easy thing. And Prabhupada said that, you know, he said some of the soldiers will fall like that, but it's still glorious, you know, and, you know, it takes some explaining, but I wouldn't feel embarrassed. If somebody brought that to my attention, I wouldn't feel like all, uh-oh, they got me now. I'd feel like I could stand there and talk to them and explain to them how there's a big difference between, you know, somebody who's a dedicated, dyed-in-the-wool gross materialist engaging in abominable activities and a devotee who's really trying to, you know, dedicate his life to trying to get purified and share it with other people. And if he has some problem, there's a big difference between those, you know, two things. Yeah, Archdeepa.
Yeah, and when we glorify those devotees, we didn't glorify them because they were eating meat or drinking or whatever. We glorified them for their devotional activities.
Right.
And then when they turned away, we said, hey, come back. You know, it's not like we glorify them when they're fallen and doing all kinds of nonsense. So, but back to this question, because we really need to look at this head on. There's a segment of our society, a lot of them say second generation, who actually make this argument that how is it that Prabhupada expected Westerners, those outside of the Vedic culture, to follow these four rags? They're very happy to not follow them, or at least some of them, and chant Hare Krishna. Why wasn't he happy with that standard? If this statement is true that we're reading now, that those who are not of the higher classes, they're not held culpable for doing these sinful things. So there are segments of society, both inside our society and outside of our society, who would happily live like that, follow three rags or two rags or whatever, and chant Hare Krishna. But that wasn't proper standard. Even though we were outside of Vedic culture, he said you must follow these four regulative principles. So that's why it's a little puzzling that here it's saying that if you're not of a high class, you're not found sinful for doing these things. But at the same time, our society says you must follow these things,
yeah,
even though you're not high class to start with.
The other thing I come back to think of, maybe Maharaj can give us for edification on this, but you know, Prabhupada said you should shoot for the white rhinoceros. Because if you get it, then everybody will go, whoa, you got the white rhino, wonderful, congratulations. And if you don't, you can always just go, well, you know, it's really hard to get a white rhino. So in other words, as long as we're at it, we're trying to preach and spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, you might as well put out there that everybody has to do this. But Prabhupada may be simultaneous, knowing full well that not everybody would do it. But, you know, like also another occasion, Prabhupada said, if you go for an A, you'll get a B. If you go for a B, you'll get a C. If, you know, you didn't use those. But if you go for like a high distinction, then you'll just get a, you'll pass, and if you go for a pass, you'll just maybe squeak right by, you know. So you got to set your sights high. You got to set your sights high, try for something more than what you ideally want, and then you'll get that less thing. So, you know, Prabhupada was trying to get everybody in there somehow, but simultaneously he was realistic. He understood, well, that's not going to happen, but at least by the, you know, the attempt, more auspiciousness will go on. Maharaj, you want to say something about just addressing his question there, or?
Hare Krishna. I just apologize because I came in a little bit late.
Right.
I think I get the essence of what you're speaking about. It's my understanding that Prabhupada wanted to institute and implement the Varnashram system. That means that you have people of different categories, some who have different tendencies, strong tendencies towards more sinful activities, but everyone is to be embraced somehow. I think the thrust of our movement is to insert Krishna, try to make the society a Krishna-centric world, and that means that in the mix of human beings, there's going to be all kinds of people in there. Even in Vedic times, there were prostitutes, there were hunters and people, meat eaters and all that. But somehow or other, Krishna was the central figure, the Justin Bieber of the past or whatever.
Yeah, thank you. That was beautiful, beautiful comment. Thank you very much. Okay, we can end there on that note. Thank you very much. Gunjot Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.